Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
It's just before midnight on December 10th, 1938, on a Hollywood backlot in Los Angeles, California. Studio executive David Selznick grips a megaphone and roars out orders across the set. He's sitting on top of a 30-foot observation tower, overseeing the first shot of his new production, Gone with the Wind. David's been trying to get this movie off the ground for years, but even though he's finally about to start shooting, he still hasn't found his lead actress. No one in Hollywood quite fits the passionate, green-eyed Southern belle Scarlett O'Hara. But under pressure from his millionaire backers, David has decided that he needs something in the can, with or without his leading lady. So today, David plans to set fire to some old sets as a backdrop for one of the most dramatic sequences in the movie, The Burning of Atlanta.
Quiet on set!
From the tower, David lifts his megaphone and barks out his final orders. Beside him is the film's director, George Cukor. And once David is happy with the preparations, he nods to George, who shouts action. Flames race across the set. The heat is so intense that even up on his tower, David has to shield his face. Then, right on cue, a stunt driver races a horse-drawn carriage through the blaze, dodging smoke and debris. 7 Technicolor cameras capture all the action before George shouts cut and the flames begin to die down. David leaps to his feet and heads for the ladder. He's delighted. After 3 years of planning, he's finally got the first shot, and it's a spectacular one. And reaching the bottom of the ladder, he hears a familiar voice congratulating him. It's his brother Myron Selznick, a powerful Hollywood agent, and he hasn't come to set alone. With him is one of his clients, the young British actor Laurence Olivier. But David barely even notices him, because on Olivier's arm is a beautiful woman wearing a long mink coat. The fire still burning on set dance in her bright green eyes. With a grin, Myron tells his brother to meet Vivian Leigh, the actress born to play Scarlett O'Hara. Convinced that fate has delivered to him Vivian Leigh just when he needed her the most, David Selznick immediately casts her in his film. Principal photography will begin a few weeks later, but the shoot will be beset by problems, though David will stop at nothing to finish his epic masterpiece, eventually premiering Gone with the Wind in Atlanta, the very city he destroyed on film on December 15, 1939. A quick word before we get to the rest of the episode. The first show of my live tour will be in Dallas, Texas on March 6th at the Granada Theater. We'll be exploring the days that made America through storytelling and music, and they aren't the days you might think. Sure, everyone knows July 4th, 1776, but there are many other days that are maybe even more influential. So come out to see me live in Dallas. For more information on tickets and upcoming dates, go to historydailylive.com. That's historydailylive.com. Come see my Days That Made America tour live on stage. Go to historydailylive.com.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. no hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is December 15th, 1939. The premiere of Gone with the Wind. It's May 1936 in Honolulu, Hawaii, almost 3 years before production begins on Gone with the Wind. David Selznick lies on a deck chair, flicking through the synopsis of a novel. Although he's on vacation, the 34-year-old studio executive is always on the lookout for properties he can spin into box office gold, and now his assistant has alerted him to an exciting new title. Written by newcomer Margaret Mitchell, Gone with the Wind is set on the eve of the American Civil War. The book follows Scarlett O'Hara, a Southern belle fighting for love amid the upheaval of conflict. It's an exciting story, and David can immediately see its big screen potential, but he's not alone in that. The book is already the talk of Hollywood, and Margaret Mitchell's agent is demanding $50,000 for the adaptation rights. That's a monumental sum for an unknown author's debut novel. But David's always been willing to take a gamble. Whether it's in a studio boardroom or down at the racetrack, David loves the rush he gets from a high-stakes bet. So on July 6, 1936, David pays a small fortune to secure the movie rights to Gone with the Wind. Mitchell's novel is 1,000 pages long, with dramatic set pieces and a large cast, so David knows that making the movie version won't be easy or cheap. His first move, then, is to enlist the help of an old collaborator, director George Cukor. George has directed 5 pictures for David before and is well known for his sensitive work with actresses in particular. That's an important consideration for David on a film with a female lead. But they still need a writer to adapt the mammoth novel, so on George's recommendation, David approaches Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Sidney Howard. In October 1936, Sidney agrees to take on the project, but on one condition, that he can work alone from his Massachusetts farmhouse, 3,000 miles away from Hollywood, because producer David has a reputation in the industry as a meddler, demanding daily meetings on every aspect of production, so Sidney wants to be as far away as possible. Reluctantly, David agrees. But progress is slow. It takes nearly 6 months for Sidney to complete a first draft. And when David finally gets his hands on it, he's baffled. The script is almost as long as the book itself. Annoyed, David recalls Sidney to Hollywood and confines him to a conference room, relentlessly pushing him to finish the script and incorporate a list of revisions. After 6 weeks, the next draft is finished, and it's 15 pages longer than the first. At this point, David has had enough and he fires Sidney. Over the next few months, a host of other writers take a shot at the script, including the famous author F. Scott Fitzgerald, but David is unhappy with every draft. Eager to push production forward, though, he turns his attention to casting. Because the novel is now a best-selling sensation, the question of who will play Scarlett O'Hara has become something of a national obsession. David receives streams of letters imploring him to cast an established star like Katharine Hepburn or Betty Davis. But David doesn't want a big name for the role. Instead, he sends his assistant on a whistle-stop tour of the American South on the hunt for an unknown. But if Scarlett O'Hara won't be played by a star, David knows he'll have to make up for that somewhere else in the cast. The obvious candidate is Rhett Butler, Scarlett's dashing love interest, and David thinks he knows the perfect actor for the part, the heartthrob Clark Gable. Gable is currently under contract at MGM and is technically unable to work for another studio. But fortunately for David, MGM is run by his father-in-law. David approaches him and begins negotiations. But David's father-in-law is a shrewd businessman. He knows that Gone with the Wind doesn't have a workable script or a lead actress and that David is running short on cash, so he spies a business opportunity. He offers to loan David's production not only Clark Gable, but also $1.25 million. David is delighted, but there is a catch. In exchange for Gable and the cash, MGM demands the lucrative worldwide distribution rights for Gone with the Wind, as well as half of the film's profits for a period of 7 years. It's a hard bargain, but David doesn't have much of a choice. And even with Clark Gable cast and a new influx of funds, David still needs his lead actress. But his assistant comes back from his tour of the South empty-handed, and by late 1939, David is under intense pressure from his father-in-law to get production started. So he begins preliminary shooting for a pivotal action sequence where Rhett and Scarlett escape the burning city of Atlanta. But when shooting of this scene begins, David will get far more than he expected. His brother Myron will visit the set, accompanied by a 25-year-old British actress. And when David sees Vivian Leigh in the firelight of his burning set, he will know he has found his Scarlett O'Hara at last.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
It's February 1939 in Los Angeles, California, 2 months after production began on Gone with the Wind. Producer David Selznick jumps around his Hollywood office acting out the final scenes of Margaret Mitchell's novel. Watching from a sofa is scriptwriter Ben Hecht, who frantically scribbles down notes. The men have been up all night, fueled by amphetamines, scotch, and peanuts in their desperate race to finish the script of Gone with the Wind. Production on the film is already underway, but the early weeks of shooting have been difficult, and not just because they don't have a locked script. Director George Cukor shot just 23 minutes of film before David decided it wasn't going to work. He fired George and brought in another director, Victor Fleming. But when Victor arrived at David's office, he took one look at the lengthy screenplay and demanded changes. Now, on Victor's advice, David has brought in scriptwriter Ben Hecht to rewrite the entire thing. But with production already underway, there's no time for Ben to even read the original novel. Instead, David and Victor act out the whole storyline for him. With a strained southern drawl, David plays the heroine, Scarlett O'Hara, while Victor channels the men characters. Finally, after 5 days locked in David's office, the three exhausted men emerge with a finished screenplay for Gone with the Wind. But if David hopes the production will now run more smoothly, he's soon disappointed. The film's epic scope stretches the budget to its breaking point, and David's father-in-law refuses to inject any more cash into the project. So as David scrambles for new investors, the stress takes its toll. He gets stomach ulcers, and his hair turns ghostly white. In the end, it takes a $1 million check from a wealthy fan of the novel to keep the cameras rolling, but even that doesn't change the production's fortunes. In April 1939, director Victor Fleming nearly drives off a Malibu cliff in his Cadillac. He goes on leave, and David is forced to hire a third director to finish the movie. But Victor makes an unexpectedly rapid recovery, and just 2 weeks later, he's back on set. But that only means the chaotic production now has two directors, with each insisting they're in charge. David reaches a compromise. There's so much left to film that he decides to keep both directors on the project. The most recent hire will handle smaller scenes, while Victor will tackle the more technically challenging ones. And David certainly wants Victor behind the lens for one of the biggest scenes in the film, where Scarlett walks through a vast crowd of wounded soldiers outside the Atlanta train station. On the day of the shoot, the production buses in 800 extras, but even that's not enough to match David's vision. So the crowds of extras are augmented with dummies dressed in Confederate uniforms. David figures that no one will notice the difference in the finished film, and it takes 7 long takes to get the perfect shot. But it's not just on these big set pieces where the hunt for perfectionism slows production down. In one scene on the plantation house set, Clark Gable must carry a kicking and screaming Vivian Leigh up a long flight of stairs. It's a pivotal moment in the story, and Victor orders his cast to repeat the scene again and again. After hours of filming, Gable is on the verge of collapse, but Victor asks for one more take. The exhausted Clark Gable reluctantly obliges, plodding up the red-carpeted staircase with Leigh in his arms. And then when Victor shouts cut, he turns to the crew with a smile and tells them he didn't need that take. He'd already gotten the perfect shot. He just wanted to see if Clark Gable could do it. The cast endures 6 grueling months of shooting in total. But finally, on July 1st, 1939, the last day of principal photography arrives. The scene sees a tearful Scarlett O'Hara beg Rhett Butler not to leave her. But Vivian Leigh's tears on set aren't acting. The long shoot has worn her down, and she yearns to be in New York with Laurence Olivier. But David Selznick has one final touch to add before finishing the scene. Something about the rhythm of Clark Gable's last line doesn't work for him, so he tweaks it until he lands on the soon-to-be iconic phrase, "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn." With that, production wraps. It's taken 125 days, 3 directors, countless scriptwriters, 500,000 feet of film, and a near-record $4.25 million, but it's done. David takes the footage to his editors, and after months of chaos, the tranquility of the editing room will be a welcome change of pace. And when David emerges, his masterpiece will be complete, and everyone in the world will finally have a chance to see Gone with the Wind for themselves.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings, you look for deals, you wrote out a budget once, a long time ago, you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
It's December 15th, 1939 in Los Angeles, California, 5 months after production wrapped on Gone with the Wind. Hattie McDaniel turns up the volume on her kitchen radio. She's listening to a report broadcast live from the Lowe's Grand Theater in Atlanta, Georgia. The radio crackles with the announcement of the cast and crew's arrival at the premiere of Gone with the Wind. David Selznick, Vivian Leigh, and Clark Gable all strut their way down the red carpet. Hattie could just picture the pageant of elegant dresses, sharp tuxedos, and mink furs. But she stiffens with indignation because she knows she deserves to be there just as much as any of them. In Gone with the Wind, Hattie played the role of Mammy, Scarlett O'Hara's enslaved house servant. It's one of the most important roles in the film, but as an African-American, Hattie has been banned from attending the premiere. Georgia's Jim Crow segregation laws don't allow black people into theaters like the Lowe's Grand, even if they star in the film being shown. A few days after the premiere, though, Hattie receives a telegram. It's from Margaret Mitchell, the author of Gone with the Wind. Margaret says that Hattie's performance received a standing ovation from the audience in Atlanta, and she wishes Hattie could have heard it. More praise soon follows. Gone with the Wind is hailed by critics as a masterpiece, a sweeping historical epic brought to life in spectacular Technicolor. At the Academy Awards the following year, it takes home 10 Oscars. Among the winners is Hattie McDaniel for Best Supporting Actress. She is the first black actor to ever win an Academy Award. But even at the ceremony, she's treated as a second-class citizen, placed at a segregated table away from the rest of her white castmates. Hattie's treatment reveals the truth about race in America that Gone with the Wind disguises. The movie's representation of slavery and its heroic vision of the Confederacy bear little resemblance to the cruel reality of either institution. And as years go by, Gone with the Wind will increasingly be regarded as a controversial masterpiece, and its place in film history will continue to be debated long after its segregated premiere in Georgia on December 15, 1939. Next on History Daily, December 16, 1773, American colonists dump chests of tea into Boston Harbor in a protest against taxation without representation. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily, hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing by Mohammed Shazi. Sound design by Molly Bach. Music by Thrum. This episode is written and researched by Angus Gavin McHarg, edited by William Simpson. Managing producer Emily Burke. Executive producers are William Simpson for Airship and Pascal Hughes for Noiser.